It's time to get well with Raquel on KRWG's Wellness Confidential. Hi, I'm Edmundo Resendez. Join us for a conversation on the principles of diet and exercise, the state of mental well-being. What diets have you tried that didn't work? Why didn't they work? To some, exercise is out of reach. Why is that? Is it a matter of mental well-being? Revitalize Projects, Dr. Raquel Garzón is here to discuss a person's mental state while dieting and exercising, as well as facts and myths around popular diets. Join in on the conversation at 575-646-2212 or join us on social media as we get well with Raquel on KRWG's Wellness Confidential after the news. KRWG's Wellness Confidential is made possible by Pickwick, with a Santa Fe Grill in most locations, and Peaky Treats available in Las Cruces. Pickwick, serving southern New Mexico since 1958. By Mesilla Valley Hospice, serving generations of families during difficult times. Mesilla Valley Hospice is made possible through donations and the support of the entire community. Learn more online at mvhospice.org. Welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential. It's time to get well with Raquel. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Dr. Raquel Garzón is a certified personal trainer and a registered dietitian with a master's degree in nutrition and a doctorate of health and science. Dr. Garzón has presented wellness workshops to thousands of high performers in business and sports, including executive audiences from 35 of the top Fortune 100 companies. Dr. Garzón is here to discuss the principles of diet and exercise, the state of mental well-being. All calls and social media questions will be entered into a drawing to win a $25 gift card to Barnes & Noble or a wellness consultation price pack with Dr. Garzón. Call in with your questions or comments at 575-646-2212. We are live streaming the show on KRWG's Facebook page, so you can join in on the conversation with Casey Counts on the social media desk. Dr. Garzón, that is quite an introduction.
Thank you, Edmundo, for having me again.
Okay, so let's get the conversation started with what is the number one reason diet and exercise programs don't work?
Yeah, so, you know, I think there's probably a lot of reasons, but I want to back up and just start with, you know, I always back you up every time you ask me a question, is that a lot of times when we tackle the notion of nutrition or exercise, we tackle, okay, how do I change what I do? And what we do, it's our behaviors. And our behaviors are really an action that's an output of what's going on in our internal environment. So we don't really realize that. We just want to change what we do. But what we do reflects how we're thinking, what we're feeling, and all of those sorts of things. So I think one of the primary reasons that when we put together, let's say, a goal in eating and exercise that it fails is because we just try to change what we do instead of also looking at how we think and feel.
So are you one of the opinion that resolutions, New Year's resolutions, don't work?
I think that if you do it in the right way, it could work. Mm-hmm. But most people just don't do that. They just say, I'm going to stop eating sweets. I'm going to eat small portions. I'm going to go on this diet. I'm going to start working out 7 days a week. But the problem is that how you normally eat and how you normally approach exercise is a reflection of how you approach the world. So to make it really simple, I talk about your emotional brain and your thinking brain. So let's say that you, Edmundo, decide that you want to eat better and exercise, you know, something along those lines. And then I ask you what you did for dinner last night. You're like, oh, I totally messed up. I went to this restaurant and I completely overate. Oh, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I know, but didn't you say you're going to work on your nutrition and exercise? I know. And so then you went to work out afterwards, right? Because you know you messed up.
No, I crashed.
No, I didn't. I also didn't work out. So one of the things I would really try to help you to figure out is, well, did you eat incorrectly because of your emotional brain, or did you eat incorrectly because of your thinking brain? And you'd be like, what? What do you mean? I just overate, or I chose all the wrong foods. But it matters. It matters why or how you came to be in that situation and make those choices, because those choices are reflective of something that was going on in your brain. So every time someone wants to talk about eating and exercise, I'm like, well, let's talk about your brain and how it's working. So for example, we might, using our emotional brain, if we've had a hard day, a really tough day, lots of demand, everything has sort of gone wrong in our day, how do you normally eat after that?
Emotionally.
Yeah, like, I mean, most people are like, I just grab some fast food or I grab a bottle of wine.
Well, you know. It's a matter of grabbing a bottle of wine or beer and then some ice cream to top it off.
Yeah.
High calories.
Yeah, so it's our coping mechanism for something that's happening where basically our decision making is occurring in the emotional side of our brain. And what happens is when we get into survival-based mode, that emotional brain takes over. So survival-based mode, when I'm tired, when I'm hungry, when I've had a bad day, when I'm angry, when I'm frustrated, when I'm feeling sorry for myself because of all of the things that I have going on, one of the things what your brain will tell you to do is to eat a lot of food and to eat lots of fatty food and sugary food because that's survival food for us. So a lot of times we have really good intentions and then we get into a situation in which we've just had a hard day, a bad day, a sad day, whatever it might be. And so then we give into this, but then we think there's something wrong with us. You know, like, what's wrong with me? I have no discipline. There's nothing wrong with you. You're responding to your natural brain signals. So if you're making decisions around food or exercise that are emotionally based, you can actually change that. But if you don't realize that's what's happening, it's hard to change it. So I always give the example. Let's say you have a headache all the time, and you're like, I'm just going to take headache medicine. I'm going to take headache medicine. And you make it go away. But the cause of the headache isn't being addressed. You never really get anywhere. And that's the same thing with eating and exercising.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. If you want to join in on the conversation on exercise and diet, and the mental aspect of it. What diets have you tried? Did they work? Why didn't they work? Is exercising out of reach for you? Did you make a resolution to exercise and diet this year? And did you accomplish it? Where are you with that? Give us a call or join us on our social media desk where KC Counts is taking your comments and questions. All comments and questions will be entered into a drawing to win a prize pack to Raquel Garzon. What's the prize pack?
Well, I've brought a resistance band for working out. It allows you to do resistance training without actually having to go to a gym. So that way it takes away some excuses, and there's pictures of the exercises in there. Also, there's reminder bracelets, one of which I'm wearing right now. And it says two things. We know that if you wear a reminder bracelet around your wrist, it can remind you to stay on track with things. And the bracelet says, train for the life you want and make moments matter. And I think that that's what it's all about, right? You want to train for the type of life you want to have in order to really make those moments matter in your life. And then also, I have a book that will be coming out in a few months. It's called The Business of You. And so whoever wins the prize pack, I will send them a signed copy of my book, one of the first ones when it gets released.
Hot off the press. And that's we also right. have a $25 gift card to Barnes and Noble. So great prizes, great opportunity for you to call in and ask questions regarding what you feel you need in your health, in your life. As Raquel said, exercise for the life you want, or
train for the life you want.
What life do you want? Do you want to lose weight? What diets have you tried? Give us a call and let us know. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Dr. Garzon, one of the things, and we've had this conversation off air, and this happened to me recently, mm-hmm. where we were in our pledge drive here at KRWG, our mm-hmm. membership drive, and during the membership drives, we are well fed mm-hmm. by many area restaurants. Mm-hmm. And on this particular day, I ate breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and they were not the healthiest of foods. The next day when I came in, I felt full. I told myself, I'm full from eating all day yesterday.
Yeah.
Is that possible to be full from the day before?
You can't literally still be full because your food gets processed every time that you eat it. So it'll get broken into components and it'll get burned or it'll get stored. And if it's stored away in your fat stores, which is usually what happens when we eat too much, that's not what you're feeling. What you might be feeling, though, are sensations of guilt. So you might be reviewing everything that you ate and be like, oh my gosh, I ate like 2 days worth of food. And that becomes something that's haunting you. So then it almost suppresses your hunger from a psychological perspective.
So it is psychological.
It is psychological. Correct. Like, it's not still sitting there in your stomach and you're going, oh. If it is, you have a physiological problem, right? You need to go see a doctor.
So it was psychological. Well, again, what is the psychology of diet and exercise?
Yeah, so I already explained a little bit about the emotional brain, but then you have the thinking brain, and okay. this is the almighty powerful beast in our heads. And so in your thinking brain, I say that you have two different compartments. You have the constructive compartment that, you know, has ideas and thoughts and beliefs that are very constructive and helpful to you to align with your goals. And then you have this faulty side of your thinking brain. And the faulty side of your thinking brain tells you sort of what you want to hear to make you feel better about what you're doing. So, or to try to guilt you into something. So that is that faulty part that maybe is talking to you and saying, you ate so much, you know, maybe you shouldn't eat for the rest of your life again. And there's all kinds of things that I can say. So basically, it's like having that angel and devil, one on each shoulder, and it's talking to you. And so a lot of times I'll say, well, if you eat poorly and it's a pattern in your life, so you do it very often, it's sort of become habitual, or you just never exercise, typically that's occurring with the thinking part of your brain.
All right, let's go to our phone lines. We want to get to our phone lines as quickly as possible. So if you are out there, you want to get in right now in on the conversation, 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join us on social media where KC Counts is standing by ready to hear from you. Tina, welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential. What's on your mind?
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I understand that the program is just beginning, and I'm not exactly sure if she's planning to address specific exercises, but I'm going to throw this question out, and if it doesn't pertain, then I'll just pass. So I'm 63, obviously a woman. I'm in very, very good health, very good condition. I exercise a lot just in my yard, around the house, et cetera, et cetera. I don't smoke, I don't drink, I eat very well, but I have accumulated over a number of years what I might call like muffin tops or love handles,
uh-huh.
A pinch of fat just sitting on top of my hips, and I don't carry any extra weight anywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to address this. I Googled it, and of course I get 3,700 different options. Like, everybody has their secret recipe for addressing a particular body spot. But yeah. What do you suggest?
Yeah, I mean, this is a great question. Probably a lot of people have that same question. Well, first of all, congratulations for everything that you do to take care of yourself. It sounds like you're very physically active and you eat well.
Yeah.
So a couple of things. One is that as you age, your metabolism just gets slower. You know, things don't work the same way that they used to. And you're doing as much as you can to you know, keep things going.
Yes.
After menopause, your hormones change and you can begin to accumulate more fat in the midsection. That's just one of the effects that you can see.
Oh,
so okay. A couple of things that I would have you think about. First of all is the issue just aesthetic in terms of how it looks, but it's really not getting in the way of your life, your health, how you feel, all of the activities that are important to you? Because sometimes we can get caught up in just how things look, and we can then go into a negative spiral about that. If you think that it is affecting you in some way, then there are some additional things that you could try to make sure that you're doing everything that you possibly can. So for example, okay. Being active, like doing yard work and things around the house, it's good. But when you do something on a frequent basis like that, it's no longer considered exercise. It's just considered physical activity. So you could add exercise by doing specific strength training. So as I mentioned, the resistance band that we're giving away, but doing weightlifting, that sort of thing. So it goes above and beyond what you normally do around the house and yard. That can add some extra muscle mass, which then helps increase your metabolism. If you add in some aerobic exercise like interval training, which gets your heart rate up at much higher beats per minute than maybe doing, you know, yard work. That can also help burn belly fat, specifically interval training. And then it's just making sure that you're managing stress, getting enough sleep. When you don't get enough sleep, your body will accumulate more fat in the midsection. It's a way to protect you. But again, you have to step back and look at that big picture and say, is this the worst thing that, you know, could happen? How is it affecting me? You know, it's because I try to bring that perspective that sometimes we're so hard on ourselves and we expect so much. And I think that we need to take ownership for our lives and do what we can to be healthy, but also being forgiving of just the natural aging process as well. And it sounds like you're really doing well. So I hope that helped.
So far, I've got about 9 out of 10 of your suggestions, you know, checked off.
Okay.
But, I will continue to look at some of the interval training and some of the aerobics And I'll just keep working at it.
Yes.
I've got quite a few years yet to work on it. So
That's great,
Tina.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much for joining us. 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or join us on social media where we are taking your comments, questions. Again, we've got some great prize packs for those of you that call in and ask your questions or give your comments. You will be entered into a drawing. Let us go to our social media desk where Casey Counts has been standing by. Casey, are you taking any tips from this?
Well, yeah. Let me start by saying I want to be Tina when I grow up.
Me too.
I do have a question from an endurance runner. This is Carl, who says he's often mysticized by the recommendations about cholesterol numbers in his blood work. Mm-hmm. Although an optimized HDL level is recommended, some doctors and others say that 54 and 77 is an optimized zone, and yet mine has been as high as 100.
Mm-hmm.
For over 40 years, scientific studies have confirmed that long-distance runners have higher than expected HDL. I've always looked at the LDL-HDL ratio, which has been about 1.2 for many years. How important is that as a guideline?
Yeah, I think that, again, there are lots of nuances to it, but overall, your total cholesterol is a reflection of both good and bad cholesterol. So you can't just look at a total number and draw any conclusions. The HDL is the good cholesterol. It helps clean the blood out of those fatty deposits, takes it back to the liver for processing, and aerobic exercise is one of the ways to enhance and increase those HDL numbers. And you can have them at 70, 80, 90, 100, although it's less common. The higher that number is, the better it is, which then you can have more forgiving look at LDL or the lousy low-density lipoprotein, because it is. It's a ratio. If you have a lot more of the bad guys and too little of the good guys, that's going to be a problem. But for a lot of people who do significant amounts of aerobic training, you will see that you have more good cholesterol than bad cholesterol, and that is what matters. Now, there are more factors that affect heart disease. You can have great cholesterol numbers your whole life and still have a heart attack. So a lot of times people only look at that when there are multiple factors. So that's why I always like to take a step back and say, what are all of the factors that can affect my heart health? So inflammation is one of those things. Of course, the cholesterol. But what we want to do is look at the behaviors that contribute to this. So the eating, the exercising, the stress management, the sleep, all of those things that we're talking about not only are good for the heart and cholesterol, but it's good for the brain, it's good for the gut, it's good for multiple systems. And so I like to, instead of getting lost in the details, I'd like to take a step back and say, what are the things that we can do to take ownership and actually influence our health through these various measures?
All right, we had a question offline, didn't want to be on the air.
Okay.
Shy, I guess.
Okay.
And it's a question that I had that's similar along these lines, in that I am now over 45.
And it As am
to,
I.
And it used to be, I know. It used to be, when I was in my 30s and my 20s, uh-huh. If I wanted to lose 10 pounds, all I had to do was cut back on the tortillas or cut back on sugar intake, and bam, I would just lose the weight.
The good old days.
But now, as I'm over 45, I recently gave up sugary drinks. I gave up candy. Didn't lose any weight.
Yeah.
We had a caller that wanted to know, why over the age of 50 can they lose belly fat?
Yeah. So it's not going to be that much different than what I talked to Tina about here. As we age, we lose muscle mass. We lose capabilities that allow us to get away with stuff when we're younger. We can get away with poor eating. We can get away with too little sleep. And even though it's having an effect, we just don't feel it as much. But I will tell you that your cognitive decline begins around age 25. You just don't feel it yet. Your muscle loss begins around age 25. You just don't feel it yet. So what you have to do is you have to become even more meticulous with what you're doing in terms of eating and exercise and sleep and stress management. You just can't get away with what you used to before. But behind that is, how are you thinking? And what happens is we establish habits. So I always ate a whole pizza and washed it down with four beers. That's what I always did. And so although
those
it worked
good days.
although it worked for you then, it's not working now. But if you keep that mentality that's what I used to do, I'm going to live in my glory days, and you get frustrated about it, and then you've created this whole habit around doing that, then it makes it really hard to change those habits. You have to step back and say, what's my purpose in life right now? What are my goals? part of the issue is that we have a fixation with weight, and that shouldn't be the primary driver of why we do things. The primary driver of making behavior change should be your purpose and who and what really matters to you. So if you say to me, why, you know, you want to lose weight, I'm going to say, why? What for? How does that help you? How does that serve you in your everyday life? And then I'm going to expect an answer that sounds good, that sounds reasonable, not I want to look good in a Speedo for the next cruise I'm going to be on.
High school reunion.
The high school reunion or something temporary. I want you to have something compelling that brings a tear to my eye that I go, now that's great. And so when you do that, it allows you to step back and create a new way of thinking, beliefs, and attitudes, challenging your own ideas that you have. I call it the imprisonment of our own brains.
All right, 575-646-2212, 575-646-2212, or join us on Social Media Desk, where we are live streaming on Facebook, so you can join in on the conversation there. Let us go to our phone lines, to Monica, who has been patiently standing by. Monica, welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential.
Dr. Gazon and Edmundo, it's Monica Mojica.
Hey!
So many questions for you, Raquel. Let me just pull out of the hat. Okay, so my mother is super-duper arthritic, and she has been sort of telling me since my 20s, oh, just you wait to get arthritis, just you wait. I mean, so sort of, I was like, whatever, Mom, I exercise, I'm fine, everything's going to be okay. So now, fast forward to 47, and I'm starting to feel like those arthritic knees and the arthritic heels, and of course, this is totally self-diagnosed. I don't know if this really is arthritis, but is there anything I can do dietary-wise besides keto? sort of prohibit that, and also exercise-wise. I've been trying to walk because I'm going to be walking with a very dear friend of mine for the Bataan Death March.
Wow.
So I've been training for that. But anything else?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the question. This is great. First is, from a dietary perspective, there are dietary components that can act as an anti-inflammatory. So you can get more information on the anti-inflammatory diet. But for example, you know, fish, fatty fish that have more of the omega-3 fats in it, that can be anti-inflammatory. Turmeric as a food additive in terms of like curry, the turmeric powder, but also they have supplements that are much more potent, can also be an anti-inflammatory. Of course, your Mediterranean diet is a great example of a foundational diet that has a lot of research behind it that would be anti-inflammatory, good for the brain, good for the heart, good for the gut, good for lots of different things, the olive oil, the nuts, the seeds, the fruits, the vegetables. A lot of those have components that can be anti-inflammatory in nature. So I think just having that foundation of a healthy diet, and then when you look at exercise, we know that exercise has an anti-inflammatory effect. And that's especially true of aerobic exercise. And so as I had mentioned to Tina about doing some interval training, we know that when you're able to do interval training and go into higher heart rate modes, get more out of breath, the chemical response to that is also very anti-inflammatory. And you won't see the same anti-inflammatory effects from more consistent exercise. So like typical, you know, thing as you warm up, whether you're biking or running or swimming, you maintain a certain level. And even if it's difficult to do, it may not cause as much anti-inflammatory effect as when you do intervals, like if you go uphill, if you really challenge yourself and then recover and challenge yourself again. So I would recommend starting with those two things. One of the things that people do when they start to feel aches and pains is they stop exercising. And I tell people that is one of the worst things that can happen, because once you stop exercising, the less you do, the less you'll be able to do. And the more you do, the more you'll be able to do. So it's being smart with it. Sometimes you have to go through a little bit of discomfort to be able to go to the other side of it, right? Without injuring yourself more. But there is some discomfort you're going to have to withstand. And I do it all the time. I have lupus. I have 5 herniated discs. And I have to endure some sort of baseline foundational pain to be able to avoid worse pain through working out. And that, I think, is a hard thing for people to do. So keep doing it. It sounds like you're doing great. I know you're going to be able to do the Bataan Death March. And so just keep on going.
All right. Thank you, Monica.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or call, join us on social media where Casey Counts is standing by, ready to hear from you. Let's talk about brain power. How do we increase brain power to, in order, you know, I tend to be very forgetful. And one of the, I see commercials all the time for pills that are going to help with brain power from jellyfish. And I think to myself, wow, man, that sounds like a nice shortcut.
Exactly. That's exactly what we want. We're all about shortcuts and as the less amount of effort that we can put into something. So I do some presentations on brain aging and the top things that you can do for brain aging. So I'm going to give you the very sad news, Edmundo, that you don't want to hear.
Okay.
Number one is eating.
Eating, okay.
Good eating, and I've just outlined one of the best diets for brain aging, which is a Mediterranean diet. So you got to do the work. Number two is exercise. Aerobic exercise specifically helps us to keep our brain intact, but it also can help actually produce new brain cells, even when you're older, which is really important. It helps protect our gray matter, creates new neurons. I know most of us have lost some along the way, so aerobic exercise can help with that. Number three is sleep. So getting enough sleep, which is 7 to 9 hours. So you see here that there's no pill that's been mentioned. So eating, exercise, sleep. The fourth one is good stress management techniques. So really being able to develop techniques to move from negative emotions to positive emotions, which guess what that will do also? It helps you to eat better and exercise. So it's like this amazing connection that when I can actually manage my emotions more positively, it helps me to do everything that I need to for my brain.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Or join us on social media where Casey Counts is standing by. Call in. Hear the bad news or the realistic news as I'm hearing. Let us go to Jamie. Jamie, welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential. You're on with Dr. Garzon.
Hello, guys. Thank you for taking my call. This is Jamie. My question is about, I'm overweight and I have diabetes. And I've been hearing about the keto diet, which asks for to eliminate, completely eliminate carbohydrates and sugars from their diet. But it also, I have the question because it goes like against everything I know about diet. Because I supposedly, I used to know that if you don't eat for many hours, your metabolism gets slow. But the keto diet asks for fasting. The more hours, the better, apparently, to get your insulin level in check. And what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the keto diet is very popular, and it has been shown to have some benefits in very specific conditions, diabetes being one of them. So I'm not going to negate that there is research to support that a ketogenic diet coupled with perhaps some intermittent fasting can help control diabetes. However, here's where I'm going to go with this. Most people who have diabetes who are struggling with blood sugar control are struggling even with a much more lenient diet to control diabetes. You can control diabetes still including lots of different foods by counting carbs, by doing lots of different methods. And so if people struggle with just a foundational healthy diet which can control diabetes, I always just wonder about going on something so extreme and strict like a ketogenic diet. A ketogenic diet is probably one of the most restrictive and difficult diets to do. And if you're able to do it and it works, you have to keep doing it
forever
for it to keep working. And it could potentially decrease your metabolism, which means if you ever get off of it, you could really be in big trouble and have even more issues with your weight. So I think you have to step back and say, okay, what am I trying to do? If I'm trying to control my glucose and develop healthy habits, You know, there are just better diets to do that with that are less restrictive. And if you're unwilling to do that or unable to do that, then I would say kiss the ketogenic diet goodbye, because it's really hard to do. And there are some probably costs or potential issues that you would have to look into. So I certainly can't recommend it yes or no. I think that we need to step back and say, you know, what can I do that's logical, that's good for my gut, good for my heart, good for my brain, that also controls my diabetes? And so I always say to start there, and you have to have a good reason to do it, a very good purpose and reason for making that happen.
575-646-2212. If you want to get in on the conversation with Dr. Garzon, Raquel Garzon, we are talking about the principles of diet and exercise, the state of mental well-being. I'm Edmundo Resendez. Join us on the conversation on the phone at 575-646-2212 or on social media, where Casey Counts is standing by ready to hear from you. Let us go to the phone lines, where we have Gordon. Gordon, you are on with Dr. Garzon.
Yes, I have a question. My grandson has back injury, and I wonder what you specifically do to help your back injury.
Well, I can't speak to the medical side of things and what type of, you know, back injury it would be and what is required there. Generally speaking, you want to eat a healthy diet, because what can happen when you have any injury is that you're not as active, your metabolism slows down. If you keep eating the same amount, it puts strain on your joints and on your back if you have more weight. So it's really looking at, how do I eat in a healthy way that prevents me from putting on excess weight if I have trouble exercising, and then looking at what can I do. So one of the things we tend to focus on is, what can't I do? So I have all kinds of back problems, and I, instead of saying, oh gosh, I can't do this and I can't do that, I look at it and say, what can I do? And whatever I can do, do it, and do it consistently. And what will tend to happen is, through activity, the body responds, the body gets stronger, things are able to move better and move more. And so again, without knowing what the injury is and what restrictions you would have from a medical perspective, I always say, the more you can move, the more you'll be able to move. And if you eat healthy and try to manage that weight so it doesn't get out of hand, that's going to give you the best capabilities to recover and being able to do more from a back injury.
Let's talk about, purpose.
Mm-hmm.
How is the best way to approach purpose? You asked me earlier why I wanted to lose weight. Mm-hmm. And you said, what's your purpose?
Yeah.
Can you define that better?
Sure. Purpose is all about really who you are and as a person, and what you have to offer the people that you love, you know, you're like your family, your friends, the world, let's say in your profession. It's, you know, what are your most important values? Are your most important values kindness? Is it generosity, helping others? You know, what does that look like? So when you start with your purpose and you look at who you want to be and the impact that you want to have on the people around you, it gives you now a foundation to say, okay, how would, let's say, eating better help me to do that better or longer? So it might be that if I eat better, I have more energy, I'm nicer, I feel like I can do more, I feel better about myself, and that gives me confidence to take risks and do things for myself in my career. If I exercise, man, I feel more in control, more responsible, more ownership. I feel like I can take on the world. You know, so it's the concept of how eating and exercising can help energize you in the here and now for how you want to be, but then also how it leads you down the path of who you want to be in the long term. So if you don't eat right and exercise now because you just want to have fun, woo, and enjoy my life, at what point does that now come back and bite you in the butt, right?
So it's a... You know, as I'm thinking about this, and again, when I think of, like, well, I should exercise, I should eat better, I'm thinking of it in very selfish ways. I'm thinking of, I don't know if selfish is the right word, but I'm thinking more in terms of vanity, of like, I want to look good because the summer's coming and
right.
I want to wear a t-shirt, or, you know, I want to go to the beach. Is that the wrong way approach?
It is. I mean, it's just not a sustainable approach. You know what I mean? Because that comes and goes. And when you look at, has that worked for you?
No, it hasn't.
Exactly. So it's like, why do we want to keep repeating that same thing? The shoulds are a problem. I should do this. Should means it's almost like being placed on you. You're not taking responsibility for it when you should do it. It's all about, I will do this. I will make this happen. And it's not just for vanity. Because, you know, you have a daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about looking good, but how you eat teaches her about how she should eat and take care of herself. It shows what's important to you and how you actually, if you value yourself or not. So if you value a car, you take better care of it. If you value your body, you should take care of it.
That's an interesting way to look at it because, you know, we do tend to wash the car, vacuum it. You know,
and you can trade that sucker in and get a new one if it ever falls apart. But this that you're carrying around with you, you can't trade it in. So you got to take care of it. So when you start looking at it from that perspective, that one day you might want to be around for your grandkids and not look at them from a wheelchair and say, gosh, I wish I could hold them. Gosh, I wish I could play with them. But to actually be able to do it, that's not selfish. That's really being able to give the best of you to the people that matter for as long as possible. And I'm sure that your daughter would want that.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212 to join in on the conversation with Dr. Raquel Garzon. Let's go to our social media desk where Casey Counts has been standing by. Casey?
Yes, I do have a question here. The question is, what is a good way to address fatty liver and, in parentheses, not no alcohol?
So that's, it's non-alcoholic fatty liver, or?
Meaning, don't tell me to stop drinking alcohol altogether.
Well.
Give me something else to work with.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on, you know, why somebody has fatty liver. But obviously the things that contribute to that are going to be two things. It's going to be fat and sugar. And alcohol obviously is one of those things that can contribute to fatty liver, as well as high glycemic, you know, carbs, sugar, very high fat, fast food type of eating. So generally what's recommended is a healthy diet, probably a Mediterranean style diet where you have fruits and vegetables, whole grains. They're being balanced, you know, with lower fat types of proteins. And the recommendation would be to limit alcohol. So I can't circumvent that recommendation from the perspective that that is a recommendation for it. I mean, I tell people, you know, whether it's fatty liver or high triglycerides or whatever it might be, it's, you know, avoiding that alcohol until you can get it under control. And then you can see from there, how does my body respond and what are some of the things that I can do in a reasonable manner to incorporate the things that I enjoy without getting, you know, the negative consequences from doing it.
We had a caller who wanted to be off air and asked the question. He is in his 60s, lots of regular exercise and jogging. He is a vegetarian and doesn't eat wheat. Wants to know how to lose additional weight besides those methods.
Yeah, so again, we're getting a lot of the same inquiries here. People are very weight focused, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how important this belly fat was to
people. It's interesting because we're approaching the holiday season.
Yes.
You know, Halloween is next week. And so the candies, the sweets, the tamales, the turkey, all of that. So
I'm going to repeat a couple of things that I've said that are really key. Interval training. So jogging is great. It's but a lot of times when we jog, we're jogging at the same pace each time. We're jogging the same routes for the same amount of time. Adding in sprint type of training. So adding in hills, adding anything in that's going to get the heart rate higher than it's accustomed to going, and then coming back down and recovering and doing that repeatedly, that has been shown to burn belly fat more than consistent training. The other thing is resistance training. So a lot of people overly focus on aerobic training to lose body fat. And it's good. You want to do aerobic training, but without resistance training, it makes it really, really difficult. I tell people you will plateau and you will not see results. And resistance training, a lot of people will just pick up some light dumbbells and just kind of mess around with it. You have to create discomfort. So if you're not accustomed to doing that, you don't know how to do that, I would recommend that you schedule one session with a personal trainer, figure out what, you know, real good resistance training would look like for you, and making sure that you're doing that consistently as well as managing stress and sleep. So I just want to mention that lacking sleep is one of the, it's a huge contributor to obesity or to putting on fat in the midsection. When you don't get enough sleep, your system causes you to store more calories. It causes your metabolism to slow down. It increases hormones that tell you to overeat and decreases hormones that tell you that you're satisfied. So you also have to get enough sleep. And when you don't manage stress well, that causes you to store belly fat. So I'm just going to put those things in place, just making sure I've emphasized those.
All right, let's talk about training yourself to listen to your body.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we had some calls earlier where they were experiencing aches and pains.
Yes.
You know, so how do you train yourself to to listen to your body to know when there's good aches and pains as a result of exercising versus the bad aches and pains?
You know, I can't give you like one way to do that. I think it's paying attention, doing it consistently, and over time you really get to learn and understand your own body. I always say that if you want to be a scientist of anything in life, be a scientist of yourself. Know yourself. And when we talk about listening to our bodies, it's not just our bodies. Like, okay, listen to your stomach, right? So if you tell me I'm hungry, I'm going to say, is it your stomach that's hungry or your mind that's hungry or your emotions that are hungry? So really tuning into where you
feel
things.
For me, after 9 o'clock, I know it's my brain.
Yeah.
That's convinced me I'm hungry.
So it's not just listening to the actual physical body. That is important, but it's also listening to your mind. What are the thoughts going through your head as you make these decisions? And so, you know, mind over matter, there's something to that. And you can talk yourself into things and you can talk yourself out of things. And you can do that for good or for evil, I would say. So it's really becoming a scientist of your body, your emotions, your mind, the thoughts that you have, the things that you say to yourself are some of the most powerful things that you can influence and change to have a successful life, including eating and exercising.
575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. What diets have you tried that were successful and are continuing to be successful for you? Share them with our fellow listeners and let them know what works for you. Is exercise out of reach for you? Dr. Garzon says, no. It's part of what we need to do. Did you make a resolution to exercise and diet this year? Where are you with that? Are you planning on making some resolutions in this upcoming year? Are you planning on going on a crash diet to fit into that dress for the holidays? Or are you planning on taking advantage of the holidays and eating whatever becomes available? 575-646-2212. 575-646-2212. Let's talk about developing a stress management routine. You know, some of us make the excuses like, oh, my job is very stressful, so therefore I can't manage stress. It is what it is. Is there a way to develop a stress management routine for those that work in high stress environments?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is a whole multifaceted approach, but what I say is, first of all, stress is a state of mind. Mm-hmm. So when we say I have a stressful job, what does that mean? You know, you have a job in which you're required to do things. It's our interpretation of that creates stress. So we create stress in our own heads. So in the studies, the best thing that you can do is prevent that sensation that you're feeling overwhelmed and stressed. And prevention is all about planning and organization and sort of the mindset that you take. I have this challenging job because I want to, or because it provides for my family, or for, you know, whatever reason. And in order for me to be successful with it, I have to plan and organize and prepare. So that's one of the things. It's stepping outside of yourself and being an observer. So if something happens that could be potentially a stressful situation, you kind of step out and you look at it as an observer. Take yourself out of it for a second. Create a perspective. Look at your purpose and say, is this worth really getting upset about? What can I do about it? If I can't do anything, if I get upset about it, it just makes me unhealthy. So now you have to come up with those coping mechanisms. So prevent stress. Have a healthy approach to when you get into situations that could potentially trigger a stress response, evaluate it, step out of yourself, figure out what you can do about it or not. And then if you decide that it's worth stressing about, then create constructive action to deal with it. So a lot of times we go, oh, I had a stressful day. Let's just go for happy hour and get wasted. Or, you know, I had a stressful day. I'm going to binge watch Netflix for 4 hours. Well, that doesn't really take away what happened that was stressful. And then it just puts you into a vicious cycle because now you drank too much and you have a hangover the next day and you didn't sleep well. You binge watch Netflix instead of doing other things that were more productive. And now you've lost all that time and you start again tomorrow and you're no better for it. And so by putting strategies in place that say, okay, I had a stressful day. You know what I should do? I should go work out so that I can press the reset button in my brain. That is a reset button for your brain to start fresh and have an actual logical approach to the things that are going on in your life. So prevent, observe, and then take constructive action. Those are all techniques that are going to just serve you in stress. They're going to serve you for eating and exercising too. See, I have to throw that in there.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, I worked worked alongside with Casa de Peregrinos. They had a fasting day, you know, fasting to call attention to hunger. And they challenged me to fast for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I took it to heart. I didn't drink caffeine, you know, didn't drink any sugary drinks. I didn't eat breakfast or I didn't eat lunch and didn't eat dinner. But, you know, one of the things I noticed the very next day when we broke the fast, we went to a restaurant and everybody there was like, oh, I'm going to indulge.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like indulging. I actually ordered a fruit plate.
Yeah.
A fruit and yogurt plate. And then for lunch, we went to a restaurant and I ordered a salad.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there? You know, again, you would think that after not eating for so long, I would be want to indulge.
You had some constructive thoughts, Edmundo.
Is that what it is?
Yes, because, well, first of all, I remember when you told me about this, I was like, was it hard for you to do? And you said no. And part of it was because the cause was very important to you, which shows you the strength of purpose.
Purpose.
When you have a strong sense of purpose, doing hard things like not eating for an entire 24 hours becomes very easy to do. But if I were to just tell you, oh, just do it because I told you to, you'd be like, I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we become rebellious.
Yes.
So we have to have that strong purpose. Second is your mindset matters going into the next day. So a lot of people will fast and the next day they're like, I deserve this. I haven't eaten. I've got to compensate for it. That's all faulty thinking in your thinking brain. Or it could be some emotional stuff. But mm-hmm. you used constructive thinking. You said, even though I fasted, it's like each meal is independent. So if I overindulge, then what did I fast for? Right? The whole notion of fasting was to show that people have to endure this who don't have money and don't have food security. So by you overindulging the next day, that's like, who gets to do that? Who actually suffers from hunger? So maybe down in your subconscious, you felt like, wow, I should be very appreciative of having food and use food in a strategic way that takes care of my body in ways that people who have food insecurity just can't do. And that's where perspective, I think, really matters. I travel a lot to poor areas and slums and shanty towns, and it gives me this perspective that I want to appreciate my food and be reasonable with it because there are so many people that don't even have that as an option. So for me, it switches the chip and it kind of changes the way I look at food. And I think that that's what the fasting did for you.
Let us go to our phone lines where we have Tina standing by. Tina, welcome to KRWG's Wellness Confidential. What's on your mind, Tina?
Hi. I'm sorry to call back, but I just have to admit my ignorance. I really don't know what you mean by interval training and aerobics.
Okay.
I do Zumba like 4 or 5 times a week.
Okay.
And I still have these love handles.
Okay.
So could you help me with that?
Sure. And
Thanks, Tina.
I'm sure you're not alone. So Zumba is a great aerobic exercise, and I always encourage people, you know, find an exercise that you like and do it. Here's one of the keys, though, to really getting the body to take some action is to do things that are different than what you normally do. So if you do Zumba 4 or 5 times a week, maybe do Zumba 3 times a week and take the other 2 days and do HIIT training. So HIIT training would be interval training, and you can either do it on a piece of cardio machine or you can actually do a HIIT training class. But what interval training means is that after a period of warming up, you're going to do 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes of an intensity that makes you feel extremely out of breath. And HIIT training pushes you to the point where you're like, if I do this for 5 seconds more, I'm not going to be able to do it at all. So interval training is 30 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minutes. It varies, of very high intensity. You can't do it anymore. So then you come down and you do whatever exercise you're doing at a lower pace to catch your breath. And then you repeat it all over again. And you would do these series. You know, you might do 5 or 6 of these intervals. Maybe you're doing 7 of these intervals in your 30-minute aerobic training type of session. So if you ever do the Peloton bike, for example, they've got HIIT training sessions that are 20 minutes total, but you are really hitting these 30-second intervals or 1-minute intervals or 2-minute intervals at a very, very, very hard pace. So what happens is it does things at the cellular level that you will not get at slightly lower heart rates. It's going to the point of near exhaustion that seems to trigger these metabolic changes to occur.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so look it up. There's lots of information that you can find online on HIIT. It's H-I-I-T, so HIIT training or interval training. And you can basically make anything interval training.
Wow, that is really interesting. I really like that idea. I could do Zumba for like 4 days a week, and then on the weekend or like 3 days a week, I could do the interval training.
Yes, absolutely. And you should see a difference when you do that.
Wow. Oh, thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate you defining that. And this
You're
just
welcome.
Opens up a whole new thought process for me. So thank you.
Yay. All right, Tina. Thank you. If we can change the life of one person.
Look at that.
it all makes it worthwhile. Where can people get a hold of you for additional information or just for what you do and what you offer?
Yeah, so you can go to my website. It's www.revitalizeproject.com. And my email is Raquel, R-A-Q-U-E-L, at revitalizeproject.com. And it's all about revitalizing your life.
Okay, so let's recap.
Okay. Are we almost done?
Yeah, we've got 4.5 minutes
oh,
to go.
Oh, no. So, I have so much more to say, Edmundo.
I know. We have to do this again. So diet and exercise is part of an emotional well-being of mind over matter and having purpose.
Yes.
Okay, so recap for us.
Yes. So when you look at eating and exercising or any habit you have, you also want to look at your brain. How am I managing the emotional side of my brain? How am I managing the thinking side of my brain? And one of the overarching ideas is when you have a great sense of purpose, it allows you to create better coping mechanisms emotionally so you do the right things with your habits. And you can also constructively create the type of thinking that supports your purpose, your goals, and the habits that you would like to have instead of those faulty ones taking over and dragging you down with them. So create that sense of purpose, create goals for the right reasons, and always make sure that whatever you're doing is sustainable and logical and not just something temporary that you're doing.
Okay, so, all right, let's go real quick to our social media desk. Casey?
Yeah. So this maybe it was something that you touched on a little bit with your own experience, Edmundo, going 24 hours fasting. But George wrote, after exercising, and he specified a 30 to 40 mile bike ride, it seems like it acts as an appetite suppressant, mm-hmm. where logic expects that there would be, yeah. you know, a bigger appetite after exercise. And so he's wondering if it's something physical or if it's just a mindset thing.
There is a physiological reason for that. So when we exercise at those higher heart rates, it does temporarily suppress the appetite. It has to do with things that are happening in the system with insulin. It's to some degree self-protective when we're outputting all of this energy. However, so what happens, because I work with athletes, what happens is you do actually need to consume carbs after exercising, especially if it's been long and intense, because that helps you to replenish muscle glycogen, for example, so that you can continuously exercise day after day after day. So what will happen is if you listen to the body and you let that appetite get suppressed, and it's usually suppressed for about 30 to 60 minutes, what will happen, though, is it comes back with a vengeance. So later, you will overeat. But now you're overeating at a time that you're not burning as much because that exercise session is already over. So this is why a lot of people training for marathons, there was a study that showed 17% of people training for marathons got fatter. And part of the reason was not eating right after exercise or maybe before because of that appetite suppressant issue, but then overeating later and feeling justified because they did so much exercise. So that's the sports nutrition side, and it's a little bit more mathematical and specific and strategic, but there is a physiological reason that appetite gets suppressed, but then it comes back later and knocks you over the head.
Okay, so as we wrap up the show, let us go to our drawing.
Oh.
This is for the gift card to Barnes & Noble.
La, la, la. Let's see who I pick.
Claude
is the winner. Claude. Okay. So Claude. Hopefully we have Claude's information and I can reach Claude and
That's
get
social
Claude.
Media?
I don't know. There's a phone number
yeah,
here.
It's a caller. Okay,
oh,
great.
Nice.
So let us go to the price pack.
All right. So this was for which one, Claude?
For Barnes & Noble.
Claude? Barnes & Noble, congratulations. All right, prize pack. That means my book, my resistance bands. Let's see here. Gabrielle is the winner.
Great. So congratulations, Gabrielle.
All
right, Raquel. Dr. Garzón, thank you very much.
Thank you, Edmundo.
We'll have you again.
I hope so.
All right. Thank you. Learned a lot. Thank you very much for tuning in to KRWG's Wellness Confidential, which was made possible by Pickwick, with a Santa Fe Grill in most locations, and PQ Treats available in Las Cruces. Pickwick, serving southern New Mexico since 1958. By Mesilla Valley Hospice, serving generations of families during difficult times. Mesilla Valley Hospice is made possible through donations and the support of the entire community. Learn more online at mvhospice.org. KRWG's Wellness Confidential was produced and hosted by me, Edmundo Resendez. Fred Martino is Director of Content. Casey Counts worked the social media desk. Jacob Lockwood handled the phones. And Mark Johnson is our technical producer. Thank you very much for joining us.